This episode of Extra Features is sponsored by Starship Films. Some great titles such as Lars and the Emo Kid, Conjoined and The Dead of Night can all be found on Amazon Prime. Enjoy the show!
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 229, and I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon. I'm feeling judgmental.
You are.
I'm Danny. I'm stuck at fantasy football.
I'm Doug, and the Yankees are out of the playoffs, so.
Yeah.
Yay.
Because they hit a two-run off Osuna and couldn't win it.
Nope.
Oh, man.
So, Kevin, what have you been up to? Seen any new movies or anything?
I've seen a couple of new movies. Why do you ask?
I don't know. I thought there might be something important in your life that you could discuss for half an hour on the show, maybe.
I can't think of anything, to be honest.
Really?
Nothing yeah.
Involving jokes and makeup and a dancing on a stairwell?
No, you're losing me.
Joker!
Joker! Oh, Joker. That movie, yeah. I saw that movie.
Yeah, and you saw it before anybody else here did.
Like 2 days before.
Still counts.
Oh, on Wednesday?
I went to a Wednesday screening.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, nah, I don't know.
If the old co-host was here, that would be a booyah.
So have we all seen this one?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah, okay. So it's directed by Todd Phillips, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Robert De Niro, Zazie Beetz, Francis Conroy, Brett Cullen, Shea Whigham, I think, or however you say it, Bill Camp, Glenn Fleischler, and Lee Gill.
All right, well, I'll kick it off and say that I thought it was okay.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was a very well-shot movie, and I thought that Phoenix's performance was amazing, fantastic, great performance, and I can definitely see him getting nominated for an Oscar for this. But it's a very dark movie. And the Joker is a very dark character, but this is not the Joker. This is guy off his meds who finds catharsis in violence. So to me, it wasn't a Joker movie. It was just to me, the Joker is not someone you should feel sorry for or try to understand. He's crazy. He's a force of nature. This is just a guy who stopped taking his medication. So that's my take on the film.
Well,
it was off-putting.
Wow, I have to 100% disagree with you. I mean, I understand the guy's off his meds. I would totally give you that. But can't we have multi-universe Jokers? Is that the whole point of DC?
I thought that the film would have been better if they hadn't tried to horn in elements of DC Comics into it.
The Batman?
If we didn't have Thomas Wayne and Bruce Wayne in the film as a child and trying to tie his origin to theirs, I would have enjoyed the film more because every time Thomas Wayne was mentioned, I was like, oh shit, yeah, this is a Joker movie. Okay. to me, that was just shoehorned in. It was like, and those are the only scenes where, like, he is in every scene of that film.
Yes.
Except a couple of scenes with Thomas and Martha Wayne.
Correct.
And to me, those were the unreal, like, so maybe those were the fixed points. I mean, I have a theory about the film and the ending of it that I'd rather discuss after we've all given our reviews.
Okay.
But,
okay.
But I don't know. What did you guys think?
Well, I got to totally. I love this film. Absolutely. It'll be on my top 10 list for sure. I love the visuals. I like dark movies normally. I thought that he looked good. I actually had me believing he was a Joker by the end. I love the dance routine on the stairs. It was phenomenal. I thought he was psychotic enough, which I expected his early Joker to be. I mean, the Joker has to get to that point in my world that he becomes Batman's villain, but he's got to start somewhere.
This guy was no clown prince of crime.
No, I don't think he was smart enough, but maybe in his world he is.
Hmm.
You know, maybe he spurs one of those guys on the train. I mean, I love the train scene when he gets on with all the other Jokers. Mm-hmm. And the cops are chasing him. I thought that was great. Yeah. You know, I thought every time he did something, it worked for me. I thought Todd Phillips made the most beautiful Gotham I've ever seen in my life, a Gotham I actually thought Batman could exist in.
Well, it was like 1970s New York.
Yeah, which I love 1970s New York film. So this is, they've geared it to me. And I thought Joaquin Phoenix was a genius. I gotta see who's gonna beat him this year, if there is somebody who can beat him this year for the Oscar. Because to me, that was an Oscar performance.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you that.
I mean, I think De Niro was just here for the cash. I think he did an okay job. But I like the sub-characters. I thought Joaquin got it from the beginning with the sign spinning and him losing it all the time. And I understand Todd Phillips is trying to say you can blame it on society, but I think these tendencies were inside him the whole time. He's been put down. He was lied to by his mom. And this, the system failed him. He was just a ticking time bomb the whole time. It works for me.
See, I go back and forth on the film. There are times when I absolutely love it, and then there are times when I think to myself, nah, I just didn't like it as much as I had anticipated. Right now, I'm feeling kind of in between. I think it was a good movie, but not a great movie. And I, too, have a theory about it.
Yeah, I had to see this twice, because the first time, it just made me feel really negative. It's just so dark and gritty and realistic, but I think it's like an accurate portrayal of the world right now. And then I saw it again, and the second time, I enjoyed it. I liked it the first time, but I really liked it the second time. I just, I enjoyed how, it was just ambiguous what was reality and what was going on, what was really in his head and what was actually going on. And I thought the editing choices were interesting in that way. We'll spoil everything, but yeah, it was Zazie Beetz in that whole aspect. I thought the character was interesting. Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is great. It made me uncomfortable every time he showed his ribs. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do that, but, I think my favorite scene was when he was doing the dance in the hospital and then he dropped the gun.
Yeah. That was great. Funny and disturbing at the same time.
Yeah. I liked a lot of it. I liked, the parts about the garbage and, I thought the ending was interesting too.
And can we just say Alfred is the worst butler ever to allow a guy to come up to the fence that close to his 10-year-old ward or whatever?
Mm-hmm. I didn't even clue in that was Alfred.
Yeah, it was Alfred.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look right.
What's your theory?
All right, my theory is that none of it happened.
I think the same thing at times.
My theory is at the end of the movie, he did a double bill of Taxi Driver and King of New York, and the Joker lives life in his head, and so it's at art. So the movie, the only parts of the movie that actually happened were at the end when he's with the woman, the psychiatrist in Arkham Asylum, and he's laughing, and she's like, "What's so funny?" He's like, "You wouldn't get the joke." But he's just had this whole vivid flashback scene of him being this savior of Gotham, and this is how he came to be. And it's all a delusion. It's like everything else with the Joker, it's all fallacy and you know, what's real and what's not, you don't know. It's like his recounting of the tale with Zazie Beetz, right? Was she there or was she not there?
Yeah,
of course she wasn't there. And then did he kill her or did he not kill her? I think he actually killed her based on what you see. But, did this stuff happen or not? And the time periods and being set in the early 80s and the you know, to me that everything was off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Batman and Joker are supposed to be contemporaries. Like, in this reality, the Joker would be an old man when Batman shows up on the scene. So, Sorry, go ahead.
I was thinking exactly the same thing you were, that the time jump wouldn't make sense to me. That's why I went with the multi-universe. But I agree. I mean, we don't really know what's real or fake in this movie. You just kind of sort of assume.
I think it was all a joke.
I could have been. I thought maybe just the TV scenes were real. And every time he watches TV, he transgresses into this dream.
Mm-hmm. I had similar thoughts. Like the gun, especially the second time, I kind of clued it. Like I was like, oh, this actually makes sense, because when he's like, when the psychiatrist asks, like, oh, something about him being locked up, and then he's hitting his head against the door. I was like,
yep.
Oh, he's just in Arkham Asylum the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's imagining it all. He's hitting his head against the wall in frustration and imagining the situation.
Yeah. Because just, I mean, I think it makes sense, because, like, there's so many scenes disconnected from reality. Like, I mean, like, some just that, like, the one part I didn't like was just, like, him doing the interpretive dance after the subway scene. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was empty, but, yeah. It's a good theory.
My whole theory is that he dies in the refrigerator, because the first thing you see after he closes the refrigerator door on himself is him waking up to the phone call to be on Murray's talk show. Ooh. And I think everything with Murray is delusional, because he first imagines that he's in the audience, and I honestly think Murray using his stand-up routine on the TV show, I think that wasn't real either, just because what talk show would do that without at least first reaching out to the community, because there's waivers that need to be signed, and I think I agree that pretty much everything in his head, it's all fake, and it was all just his fantasy.
Yeah, that means that makes sense, because it's like all like fantasy fulfillment, like afterwards, like killing like Thomas Wayne and the Martha.
And that's when he becomes, I think, more confident too as the Joker, after he's asked to be on Murray's show. That when he's being chased by the cops, he does that little dance when they're getting attacked, and I think that's all fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then killing Randall too. Oh, that's so cruel with the chain lock.
I don't know how I feel about that. Everybody in my audience laughed at that, and I did too, but I wasn't sure if we were supposed to.
I think so, because I laughed as soon as I saw him put the lock on, because I knew what it was setting up. I was like, oh, no, that's just me.
Yeah. I have to admit that our audience did laugh at that scene too. The awkwardness of it. And, of course, the fact he let him go was a nice...
Yeah.
But that setting up that code that, you know, if you've done me wrong, then I'm going to kill you. But if you were nice to me, I'm going to let you go. I'll let you live. But what did
Zazie Beetz do to him that was wrong? If he did kill her, like people are surmising, that breaks that code.
He was freeing him from obligation. So he felt some emotion towards her.
Mm-hmm.
And that she was somehow holding him back or making him want that.
Okay.
And he wanted to kill that part of himself. He wanted to move on. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of.
If she's something that he can't achieve. Like if he can't have can't have a normal relationship.
Right.
I could buy that.
So one quote I really liked was, I can't remember the exact one, but it was like, what people with mental illness, people think that you should act like you don't have it. Or, I'm not saying it right, but something along those lines.
I thought the whole message, someone said, what's the meaning of this movie? I think the meaning is, don't cut funding for mental outreach programs. Because people might not get their medication, and then they'll want to kill you, which is a terrible message. I mean, it's a good message, but it's also essentially what the movie is trying to say. It's saying, oh, yeah, if you do all this stuff, you never know. You might get a violent psychopath. kill people on TV. Like, that's the only thing I could get out of this movie as a message.
Yeah, it's just anarchy. I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know.
But he wasn't an anarchist like Heath Ledger's Joker was. Heath Ledger's Joker was smart. He had every contingency worked out in all of his plans. Which is why I think he's still probably the best cinematic Joker, because he wasn't just a criminal or a crazy clown. He was whip smart and had everything worked out. He really was the clown prince of crime in that sense. And he was doing it to work Batman.
Okay.
And like, the Joker to me is a response to Batman, where they exist. And you know, now we've flipped it in this film. That the chaos of the Joker begets the order of Batman, in theory. Although that's like 20 years down the road. Like in the other films, it's always Batman is introducing order and Joker is trying to throw a wrench in that plan.
Okay.
So, but to me, they're not fully realized three-dimensional characters. I'm trying to think of the right words. They're anagrams? Or not, that's not the right word. I'm blocking on this. But like, they're ideological representations of certain sides of a coin.
Oh, okay.
Batman is what you want. You want total order. And freedom of choice, free of breaking the law. And Joker is, let's do whatever we want, however we want, kill whoever we want, steal whatever we want. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. All right. No, I'm starting to digress. Simon, yeah. any
Oh, that's fine.
I gave you my thoughts. I mean, what do you want? The guy's going to win an Oscar. Todd Phillips impressed me as a director. I didn't think he could do something this good.
I don't think Todd Phillips will get nominated for director, though.
I don't think so either. But I think he did a good job on this. I was fully expecting crap, so I was much happier.
I would nominate the cinematographer, though. The cinematography was amazing in this film.
And set design. No, not set design.
Yeah, I go with that.
Yeah, I thought that was phenomenal. Okay.
Production design, too.
We moving along?
Yes. Let's do our Netflix film,
sure.
Between Two Ferns, the movie, starring Zach Galifianakis, Matthew McConaughey.
I thought it was Doug, the whole movie.
Just a lot of cameos. Sorry?
I thought it was Doug, the movie. He looks exactly like
people
Doug.
People do tell me I look like Zach Galifianakis, yes.
Sorry, also Will Ferrell, Lauren Lapkus, Chrissy Teigen, Brie Larson, Paul Rudd, David Letterman. Just a lot of people.
Keanu Reeves, yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage.
Matthew McConaughey. Peter Dinklage. Brie Larson. I can start, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know what still not to think of this film. It annoyed me to no end. At the point, I'm like, because I do extra feature interviews, I'm like, am I this bad? No. This man really annoys me. To the point, I don't want to watch this film anymore. I just want to punch him in the face. And maybe that's the whole point of the film. I'm supposed to be angry with him. But I never found it funny.
I found it hysterical. I love the fact that all the actors were in on it and that they allowed him to say those things, like when he asked Keanu Reeves if he ever decided to study somebody who knew how to act. I thought that was a cool thing to say, but it was so funny. And Keanu just went with it.
Yeah.
I won't say that this is really a movie. It doesn't really have much of a story, but I thought it was just really funny.
No, yeah, it's like a long form Funny or Die sketch.
Well, I just thought Will Ferrell was being Will Ferrell. God, that man annoys me.
Yeah, I've once loved Will Ferrell, and now it's just a bit much because he just hasn't had a good movie or script in a while.
I like the David Letterman bit. I did think that was excellent.
Don't step on the grass.
Yes.
It's all crap.
I just thought the Letterman was good. The Tegan part I thought was terrible.
Yeah, that wasn't that great.
I'm just like, why is Trish Kirsky Teigen in this movie? Like, what does she do? I still can't figure it out. And then the John Legend scene right after, I went, eh.
Yeah, the John Legend bit was the most awkward part of the movie for me.
And then they did his TV show at the end. I'm like, I just don't care. I don't know. I don't think this film was geared towards me. I think it was just boring.
I will say the thing about, have you ever seen a chicken strip? I haven't seen a chicken wear clothes. Was probably the funniest thing I have seen in a movie this year.
I thought the funniest part of this movie was the end credits. The break, oh, yeah. When they're breaking up laughing.
Yeah, yeah, those are
funny. I actually enjoyed that more than I enjoyed the whole film. Kevin, what did you think of this?
I liked it. I thought it was a bit of a stretch to do an entire film on it. Because it really was just a series of sketches thrown together with this premise that they had to make some. They had to get all these interviews done in order to secure funding so he could get his own talk show, and that was his dream and all that stuff. I mean, but you know, the previous Between Two Ferns that used to run on Netflix worked quite funny, and these are very much in the same vein. So, but.
I did like the fern joke. You just remind me. When Laura Lapis says, I don't know how to take care of fern. I keep buying new ones. Yeah. And he's like walking around the ferns. I'm like, okay, I'll give that joke full props. That one worked.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm hard, but I usually like comedy. So I just thought, but I really don't like Zach Galifianakis. I think he's an idiot. So maybe that's my problem.
So you don't like Doug?
I love Doug. I just don't like Zach Galifianakis.
Nobody likes me. It's okay.
I'm sure I had no two kids that would argue that point.
Well.
I think my favorite line was with Matthew McConaughey. I see you're wearing a shirt. Is something wrong?
That wasn't bad. I thought McConaughey did pretty good. I thought he was definitely held character.
Yeah, he was, like, the first interview. So, I mean, I think it got, like, off to a really, really funny start for me. And, I mean, I think there was some just, like, not funny parts. But I thought a lot of the interviews had good bits. Like, the meth Santa Claus for David Letterman.
Was great.
And then the whole bit with trying to steal Peter Dinklage's eggs.
Oh, yep. God, that was bizarre. Well, I did like
and then him saying... And then he's like, oh, you have $102 million left, Peter, in your bank account. You'll be okay.
I did think the other skit when he goes to meet Adam Scott, hi, I'm Adam Scott for Parks and Rec. He goes, all right, a real person. Oh, I'm an actor. Oh, crap.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It was fun, Divergent. It didn't change the world.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's not long. It's like an hour watch, 25.
Yep.
Yeah. And if you hate Zach Galifianakis, you're not going to like the film. I mean,
that was probably my problem right there.
And I mean, if you don't like if you never liked like the little Between Two Ferns clips anyway, you probably won't like a full length movie.
I've never seen them. It's the first time I've had exposure to it.
So I thought it was bizarre, like the whole Will Ferrell thing, and he's just watching all the clicks on the website.
Well, Will Ferrell's a complete dick, so I actually took that as full thing, what he would be doing.
But he was playing a complete dick, too, which is awesome.
He did a good job, because that's why Will Ferrell really is, I'm convinced.
Right.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right.
Shaft, 2019. Sorry, I'm a child. Samuel Jackson, Jesse T. Usher, Richard Roundtree, Regina Hall, Alexandra Shipp, and Titus Welliver. Which one of us has seen this?
I've seen it.
I've seen it.
I haven't. Okay. I haven't seen it.
Okay.
You're not missing much.
No.
I might be showing my hand a little early, but you're not missing much.
Why don't you start, Doug? Right.
What's up?
Why don't you start?
I thought it was very, it was a very regressive movie, meaning that it felt more like a movie you would have seen in the 90s with the that kind of sensibilities, but not in a good way. I get that Shaft was supposed to come off as like this macho male and that's what women really want and stuff, but it just felt really regressive and it wasn't funny. It wasn't poignant. None of the action scenes were all that spectacular. The mystery wasn't even that great. It just really did not work for me at all. And while I could recommend the original Shaft, the 2000, I cannot recommend the 2019 Shaft.
Well, Doug, I think me and you are totally on the same page here. I thought it was dumb. I thought it was totally, it should have been done in 1970s. They're kind of like doing a 70s 2000 film. Like, this doesn't work. I understand they wanted all the Shafts in the movie at the same time. I got that. Didn't work. I mean, Shaft being a ladies' man doesn't work. The guy being an FBI agent doesn't work. Nothing about this film works. It's choppy. It's uninteresting, and the action scenes stink. Even the break dancing dance, whatever the hell nonsense that was terrible too. And I found them unbelievable. None of the characters work for me. And then watching an 82-year-old man, and I don't know how old Roundtree is. He's got to be in his 80s too.
He's only 6 years older than Jackson.
So he's 88 or whatever. Trying to go through this building, I'm like, this isn't... And killing people. I'm like,
he's not 80.
Terrible.
Sam Jackson's not 88.
How old is Samuel Jackson?
What, like 70?
So I'm watching a 76-year-old man go through buildings. It's ridiculous. Doesn't work for me at all. Terrible film. Oh, probably be on my top 10 worst of the year.
Yeah, it wasn't good. I agree. Like, the action wasn't good. The story wasn't interesting at all. Like, I didn't like the characters. And I mean, they just tried to shoehorn so much humor in, and none of it worked. And I mean, I think even, like, the premise of the story is kind of, like, Islamophobic.
Samuel Jackson, 70.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And, like, they tried to do so much humor, but they have the name of the movie right there, Shaft, and they don't even make... They barely make it even... Like, the jokes they make about their name are not funny dick jokes. Like, I think the only thing I laughed at was when the Guarda from Dexter called Samuel Jackson Lawrence Fishburne. And he was like, I'm not Lawrence Fishburne. Because of that one interview. So I thought that was pretty funny, but the rest of the movie as a whole is just really bad.
I even forgot that joke was in there. That movie just left my brain so quickly.
And Doug watched it some Saturday afternoon and still going, I could have had that time doing other things. I'm going to get you guys.
You just watched it yesterday?
Last time we recorded, I watched it that afternoon.
He missed football for this, so.
I appreciate your sacrifice.
Thanks.
That's okay. I also watched Book of Henry, so.
I appreciate your sacrifice. Oh, man. Okay, we'll do Shaft 2000 then. Also starring Samuel Jackson, Vanessa Williams, Christian Bale, Jeffrey Wright, Busta Rhymes, Toni Collette, and Richard Roundtree.
And I did see this one.
Yay, Kevin. Oh, I saw it with you the first time.
Probably, yeah. So I'm going to kick it off and say I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I revisited it last weekend. John Singleton movie, the late, great John Singleton. I thought this was fantastic. There's a lot of great performances in there. Christian Bale is Donald Trump Jr.
And that's basically what the movie is. Donald Trump Jr. kills a guy and gets away with it. And then he goes to Europe, and then he comes back and pretends nothing happened. And Shaft tries to take him out, and then he teams up with Jeffrey Wright in a crazy, like, non-Jeffrey Wright performance now. Now he's like this sage character with the deep booming voice. There he's like, "What do you mean, man?"
You know? I think that was a very early Jeffrey Wright performance, too.
Yeah.
I think that might have been, like, his feature film debut.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, though.
And there's an issue, like, he quits the police force at the beginning of the film to join his uncle's detective agency. Then we do a time jump, and then he's back with the police. But he didn't quit. Like, the running joke is he's going to quit to become a secret, like, a private eye, but he doesn't actually ever quit. In the long run, even at the end, they can't tear him away from being a policeman and helping people. I don't know. I enjoyed it. For what it was, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I've seen all the 70s Shaft films, the black exploitation films, and Shaft is a private eye and gets ladies, and, you know, his nephew is a cop who also has some success with the ladies, and... But I thought it was an interesting bit of police work and double crossing and roles in the department. Very, very 90s cop movie.
Okay, guys.
And that Shaft actually had something Shaft 2019 didn't have, which was charismatic and interesting villain.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Before I give my opinion, did you guys like to know Jeffrey Wright's first appearance?
What's that?
Presumed Innocent, 1990.
Oh, damn.
And, or, have anybody seen Jumping at the Boneyard, 1991?
No.
No.
No, I've never heard of it. So, okay, I think this film was fabulous. I saw it with Kevin. I got a $20 parking ticket afterwards. I've never forgotten because I have a stupid memory and drove Kevin home at 2 o'clock in the about midnight. Kevin also won a Shaft CD because I told him he could answer the question.
Wow, I don't remember any of that.
You were sitting in the audience, and the guy behind us was talking, and I told him in no uncertain terms to be quiet. And you told me I would get into a fight. And then they had a trivia contest, and you won a CD of the soundtrack. Oh, okay. So we watched the film, and you said, "Can I give you a drive home?" I said, "Yeah, if I don't get a parking ticket," and I got a parking ticket. But I still drove you home. So I think this film is great. I think this is exactly what I wanted Shaft to be. They played the song. We had some action. He looked like he could do the action. We had a good plot. We had a good villain. And it works. Toni Collette, I love as an actress. Good supporting cast. It works.
And her big burly Irish brothers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unlike the new one, it had a plot. I mean, John Singleton knows what he's doing. And I don't mean to be rude. John Singleton's black. He gets it. He understands black culture, what I want to see. Like, the original films are very black exploitation films.
Didn't Tim Story direct the new one?
Yeah, Tim Story is also African-American.
I did not know that. I apologize. He needs to go back and watch the original Shaft films.
He directed those classic Fantastic Four movies from the early 2000s.
Oh, there's our exact point right there. Those were terrible, too.
Didn't he do Ride Along?
Yes,
which I don't like either.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it just didn't do it for me, but I have to agree with you guys. I like Shaft 2000. I would recommend it.
Yeah, I don't love it. I liked it just fine. Like, it's entertaining and simple enough, but I kind of thought that, again, like, Samuel Jackson is badass, but I kind of thought the story lost focus. Like, when it had Christian Bale and Jeffrey Wright teaming up, and Jeffrey Wright just kind of annoyed me, and then it just turned into a revenge thing for Jeffrey Wright, and I kind of just got bored of it. But, I mean, the action was fine. The story was, like, entertaining enough, but I don't know. I just think the plot lost focus. I don't know. I just asked Doug if you saw it.
Oh, Shaft? Yeah, I've seen Shaft. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like everybody said, I thought the villains were great. I thought it was just much more interesting than Shaft 2019.
Okay. So I couldn't remember if you said anything. My bad. No, you're good. Do you guys want to do the zombie ones or Book of Henry?
Whatever you want.
Why don't we get Book of Henry out of the way and then we'll...
Okay, sounds good. Starring Naomi Watts, Jada Martell, Jigwa Chable, Sarah Silverman, Dean Norris, Lee Pace, and Maddie Ziegler. And directed by Colin Trevorrow. Jurassic World guy. I'm sorry about this one, guys.
I want to say thank you. I'm thanking you for recommending we watch this because I actually enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
So did I, actually.
I thought it was very well written and very, I mean, I was not expecting the lead character to go away so early in the film and to deal with the ramifications of his passing. And the things and the tapes he left for his mother, and I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. The kid was great. The brother was great. You know, saving the girl next door from the advances of the evil police chief stepfather who was abusing her and all that stuff. I thought it was really well done.
I have to agree with you, Kevin. I love this story. I was shocked how much I enjoyed it. I've read horrible reviews about this film. Everybody told me it was bad, don't watch it. So I never did. I sat down and watched it. I liked the way the story evolved. I thought it was a little slow at times.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I could see why, but I thought the casting was great. I liked the way the story laid out. I loved the ending. I liked the way the journal worked and when the mom was reading it. And every time she would think of something, she'd read the journal, and he would already have thought of it. And I thought that worked really well. And I love the tension in the forest. That tension scene in the forest did it for me.
Yeah.
Because I thought for sure it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know how most viewers felt about that scene, but I thought it was going to happen. And I liked the end of the film. And I really was impressed with Sarah Silverman always impresses me again in films. How she comes in, does her job, and gets out. I never feel she's out of place. I think I don't like her as a lead. I do like her as a supporting actress. I think she's a great, great supporting actor.
Mm-hmm. I thought her role has been uncomfortable at times.
And I like Bobby Monaghan as the guy that ran the cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Lee Pace. It was a nice change of pace for him. As a doctor, you know, not a flashy character, just sort of a nice supporting character in the background. He has a tendency to play either over the top, like villains like Ronan or some of the other films he's done. I like him in this.
I'll be honest, I'm pretty much the exact opposite of you guys. I kind of felt that this story was overly maudlin. I thought the shifting of almost genre, not just tone, but genre throughout the film, I didn't think was handled quite as well as if a director maybe a little more, I'll just say it, I don't like Colin Trevorrow's movies. I did not like Jurassic World. I did not like this movie. But I think in the hands of another director, I think it could have worked. Maybe if you got somebody a little more quirky, maybe somebody kind of like, I don't want to say Wes Anderson because that would just be too quirky, but I don't know. I felt the shift in tone from, you know, a mother with a single mother with a brilliant son, where she has to learn how to become a mother on her own, like become an adult essentially. And then all of a sudden, it's a thriller where Hank from Breaking Bad is molesting his stepdaughter. I don't know. Just the switch in tones and genre, I don't know. It did not work for me.
Yeah. Like, when I saw this at theaters, it was just awkward. Like, it was emotional at times, but it was just kind of really surprising how he just dies, 40 minutes in, and then it just totally jumps the shark when Jacob Tremblay comes down and is like, Mom, Henry wanted us to kill Mr. Sickleman. And I thought some of it just wasn't very believable. And it's just like the fact that she's such basically a child that she's willing to almost go through with this and snipe the police chief in the head.
Yeah, but,
the performances are good.
That's what I liked, was that she was fully into it. She was so used to being told what to do by her son that when she got down to the reality of it, she's like, no, why am I doing this? You know, like there was a point where she's at the firing range and she doesn't take the shot. And then the voice in the recording says, great shot, Mom. And she's like, oh, reality has clicked in. And she's like, this is my son trying to play me into doing exactly things the way he wants them done. And he's a smart kid, and I trusted his judgment. Maybe what he wanted isn't necessarily what I want. And I like that turn. And then as things are going, and there's some great suspense when she confronts the teacher, and then she leaves. And then he goes off, and you don't know what's going to happen. And we show up at the school, and she knows they're there for her. So she's about to go with the police, and then they're coming out and saying, oh, no, something happened to, Sheriff so-and-so. And just the relief. It's like, I can't believe we got away with it. You know? Just, there were some nice little bits of tension that I appreciated.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
But also, that whole family is fucked up, though. I mean, I love my brother, but if I found out that my brother was molesting somebody, I would absolutely turn him in.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on with that family? The movie just didn't work for me. I'll just
especially, you mean the especially molesting the daughter?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't his brother the head of Child Protective Services in the area or something? Like,
oh, this is my niece, but I'm not gonna protect her. I'll just protect every other kid I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes people don't believe it. I mean, there's this sense of, he was the police chief. He was seen to be as untouchable as beyond reproach.
Yeah, standing citizen. Yeah.
Yeah, but if they get multiple complaints about the guy, something has to be up. If there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah. I thought the editing with the child. Oops, sorry.
Sorry, maybe the brother was covering up. Sorry.
Okay. No, you're good. I thought it was a bit awkward, like how it was edited with the talent show at the end, like with between the tension. But I guess it had a point though, because it was that the principal realized, oh, through this interpretive dance, she's really hurting.
Actually, the scene with the brother doing the magic trick, and I'm going to bring my brother back. My heart jumped in my throat. I'm like,
yeah,
this is super sad. And then it explodes, and there's the silver stuff flying through the air, and everybody's crying. It was a nice touch. It was his brother was going to be okay. Was essentially, I think, was the message of that.
Yeah, that was a good moment. He was going to be okay. Yeah.
That was a sweet moment, but then at the very beginning of the talent show, it was this kid doing gangster rap who was, 10, and I said, the tones and the shifting just didn't work for me.
Yeah, not well handled at times, yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay, all right, we want to talk about zombies?
I'm always up to talk about zombies.
Oh, yeah. Okay, do we want the newer ones first or the old ones first?
Doesn't matter to me. Better hurry.
Okay. Night of the Living Dead, okay. 1968, starring Dwayne Jones, Judith O'Dea, Carl Hardman, Marilyn F. Eastman, Keith Wayne, and Judith Reilly.
Okay, I'll go quick to start. I love this film. It's a fantastic film. I gave it a 10 out of 10. I thought the pacing was great. I thought the setting was great. I liked the way the zombies moved. I liked the tension in the house. I liked the characters in the house. I thought all the characters were believable in their actions. I thought the cause of everything worked out for me. Perfect film.
100% agree. It's near perfect independent filmmaking. Like, super low budget, but story's fantastic. He used the camera in the single location in just fantastic ways. Romero started everything with zombies with this film, and it's classic for a reason.
Kevin?
I you guys have summed it up. It is a classic. I love the how crisp the film still looks.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the beginning scene in the cemetery when they're just coming to visit your father's grave and the zombie comes shuffling up the drive. They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yes. I thought they kind of moved a little quicker. I don't remember them moving as quick last time I saw this film. I like how quickly they moved. Because I find in Walking Dead, they don't move as fast.
They move pretty quickly, don't they?
Not like this.
Well, because he's the recently dead, so yeah, he's still limber enough. He's not decayed.
True, that must be it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I like the coming to get you, Barbara, a bit, but pretty sure I'm about to shit on the classic. I mean, I know it started like the zombie genre, but this is one of the most boring movies I've seen.
Oh, Dan doesn't get it.
From a modern perspective, I can see that.
Yeah, I'm 24. I want action, I guess. I can respect pacing, but I didn't think the acting was very good. Like at least on Barbara's part, like her screaming about the zombie grabbing her. I like one location things, but I just didn't really think I never really cared about the characters. I don't know. I just really couldn't wait for it to end. Just thought it was boring.
Dan, I totally disagree with you.
No, that's fair. I mean, I know it's a classic, but I don't like it.
You don't have to like all classics. There's many classics I do not enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like Taxi Driver. I didn't really like The Wicker Man.
Oh, see, I love Wicker Man. Oh. Again.
Sacrilege.
I agree. Wicker Man is sacrilege not to like.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Psycho. But
I love, Wicker Man I love.
I mean, I think I might want to watch The Wicker Man again, just through like a different lens. But it's just I didn't. Yeah, again, it's pacing for that one too.
The turnabout there, where you have this moral champion, and the police officer, and it turns out he's the prey.
Yeah.
And that moment when you know he's being led to his death, and that terror, that idea of like what can you do? These people are hell-bent on killing him. They played this joke out of it. Anyway, sorry. No, we're not reviewing Wicker Man.
We have reviewed Wicker Man.
Yeah.
No, fair. I'm not big on that one either.
Anyway. All right. So coming back from grave, what's our next one?
Return of the Living Dead. I didn't watch this one, so I'm not really sure the stars, but I got Clu Gulager, James Caron, Don Calfa, Beverly Randolph.
No, this isn't, like, what year was this one?
85. This was Dan O'Bannon.
So we're skipping Day of the Dead and Dawn of the Dead and...
Yeah, I kind of went for four that I thought added something new to the genre or expanded the genre. I went with Night of the Living Dead, which was started off what we consider modern zombies, Return of the Living Dead. This is the one where the zombie, they speak, and they ask to eat your brains. So the whole thing about zombies eating brains originated in this film.
Ooh. Yeah, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen this one. I mean, I love Dawn of the Dead. The idea of zombies in the shopping mall is just classic to me.
But that's one of my top 10 films of all time. I love Dawn of the Dead.
And I've been to that shopping mall in Pittsburgh. It's pretty cool. They do tours.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I used to go to the Pittsburgh Comic Con, and it was right next door.
Monroeville Mall. Been there.
Monroeville, yeah. And I've you would have been down there with me a few times.
I have been there, and I did buy a pair of shoes there.
Yeah.
Warm bath.
And Day of the Dead was more, like, interesting from a military perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where's the military during all this? And then that they're trying to train. And I think that's where there's some intelligence in a zombie at the end. Is that one guy that they've been testing on?
Well,
yeah. And then I guess it's progression that now the zombies speak. And they've become intelligent by the time you get to Return.
Well, Return is actually, it's a whole separate story. It's not connected with Romero at all.
Oh, okay.
It actually has, it started out with the co-writer of Night of the Living Dead, that there was issues with rights. Mm. So he just took the idea of the Living Dead and created a whole new franchise with the Return series.
Technically, a zombie is, you could do zombie movies like you can do werewolf movies and vampire movies. Like, Romero doesn't have a lock on the idea.
No, but it was the Night of the Living Dead title, I think, was the issue.
Mm.
And so O'Bannon just started this whole new series, and these zombies actually behave differently. If you shoot them in the head, they'll just still come at you. With these zombies, you gotta incinerate the body, like completely dispose of it. And this one also had a lot more humor to it. Because there's a crematorium worker who may or may not be an ex-Nazi on the run. And it definitely has more humor to it than what Romero was going for.
I have to agree with you, Doug. I actually did see this film. I like the first 10 minutes of this film I thought were great. And they're walking the guy through, showing him all the body parts and what they do there. Then they go downstairs. I'm like, okay, here we go. Zombies are going to start. And after that, I thought the film was a big pile of crap. Like, I didn't enjoy anything after that. I loved the first 10 minutes. The rest of the film, it was comical. I'm like, this is not what I want from a zombie film. I had no suspense. I didn't care if anybody got eaten. And I just thought it was silly. And the cops driving by going, oh, can't stop and save them, and keep going. I'm like, what the hell?
Even the zombie asking them to send more paramedics?
That was actually hysterical. Kind of funny. When the zombie picks up the phone, I'm like, you know, I just took it as a... like, more of a parody film of what we just watched, the first one, Night of the Living Dead. I thought it was just a parody. It didn't do anything for me.
I enjoyed it. I loved it. I'm a sucker for zombie films, and this one was different enough from other zombies that I like the talking zombies. I like the humor in it. It worked for me.
All good. Each his own.
Yeah, like, with you not caring who got eaten, I think the only person I cared who got eaten in Night of the Living Dead was who's the main guy? Ben?
Ben I loved.
Yeah. Anyway, should we have time for any more? Or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's do Train to Busan. Starring Yu Gong, Yumi Jung, and Dong Seok Ma. We don't know it, any of those actors.
Okay. Do you want to go first, Dan, or do you want me to? Or Doug? I don't care.
One of you guys can.
Okay. This film was fantastic. I gave it a 10 out of 10. This is probably my favorite zombie film I've ever seen in my life. It was exactly how I feel in a zombie apocalypse would happen, exactly how I feel the zombies would work, exactly how I feel people would react. The storyline worked for me. It's a little hokey near the end, but I didn't care. I bought into it. Because I thought it was believable. I just absolutely love the way the zombies work in this film, and that's what does it for me. I love the shooting style, the long shots. How many extras did they use in this film constantly? And then speeding them up as they shoot it? Absolutely brilliant. 10 out of 10 for me.
The one word I would use to describe this film is harrowing. It just, you're on the edge of your seat throughout the entire thing. You're constantly in fear for these characters, and just the visuals. The director of this film, it comes from an animation background. This was his first live action film, and it was amazing. probably the best zombie film of the decade. It is utterly fascinating to watch, utterly harrowing. You care about the characters, just top notch.
Well, I hated this film too. I'm kidding. I'm joking. I love this one. It's fast paced. This is what I love. I love the way that the zombies move. I haven't watched this for a while, but when I watched it, I really, really enjoyed it. I love the setting. Yeah, like what you said about how believable it is that like this is where an apocalypse starts. Yeah, it made me care about the characters. I thought it was really great.
I've not seen it, so I can't add anything to this.
Oh, well, it's your loss, Kevin.
Yeah, I wasn't ever aware. I was not aware of the film.
It's on Netflix.
Is it recent?
About 2016, 2 years old, I would have said, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can watch it.
I will look into that.
Let's hit the last one, boys.
Okay, 28 Days Later, starring Cillian Murphy, Naomi Harris, Christopher Eccleston, Brendan Gleeson, and directed by Danny Boyle.
Doug, go ahead.
This one I chose because of the controversy around whether the creatures in this film are actually zombies or not. My whole thing is I don't care if they're actually zombies or not. The film plays on zombie movie cliches. So whether or not the creatures are zombies, to me it's a zombie movie because that's the way it behaves. There's hordes of creatures coming after survivors. And honestly, I love this movie. The opening with Cillian Murphy coming out of the hospital in an empty London is scary as hell. I mean, seeing a major city like that empty, it's terrifying. And they got top-notch actors. Donald Gleeson was fantastic. And when what happens to him happens to him, or Brendan Gleeson, I think I said Donald. What happens to him happens to him. It was sad. And I loved this movie. I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
Well, Doug's pretty much said it all, but I like the movement of the zombies. That's always a big thing for me in these films. They move quickly. Danny Boyle is a fantastic director if he has a script he can work with. I do have a couple of issues with most of the films, but I like Danny Boyle's shooting. I like the way he shot this film, that it just seemed the zombies would never stop coming. They just would come, drop, drop, and come. And the way he edited that, I thought was brilliant. I thought, again, good character acting, good script, good ending. Are they really zombies, you ask? I don't think so, but I think they're on the way to becoming zombies. But this is too big early in the movie, you know what I mean? I mean, they're just starting to get there. I mean, who knows? But I thought it worked well. I thought it was a bunch of guys on PCP just going nuts.
Yeah. Aren't there more zombies in 28 Weeks Later?
I cannot. I didn't like that film, I don't think. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen this one. But, I enjoyed it. Pretty much agree with everything you guys said. Sorry. Forgot to read up on this one.
Oh, well. Things happen. We're done,
yeah.
Guys.
I mean, it's very much. And what about the Walking Dead bit? Because in a sense, this is the opening of Walking Dead.
I was about to say something, but I couldn't remember when Walking Dead premiered.
2009.
And 2009 was Walking Dead. Yeah, and when did this come out?
2002.
Oh, so Walking Dead totally took it off this then.
Not sure when the graphic novels came out though for Walking Dead.
No, after 2002 for sure.
Okay.
So, because the TV show...
Oh, yeah. So Walking Dead, the graphic novel started being published in October 2003. So about a year after this came out.
Yeah. So I think that Kirkman said, it was just a coincidence. But I'd have to say, the idea of him waking up in Atlanta in a hotel, in a hospital, and nobody else around... It's very similar to Cillian Murphy waking up in London. But, I mean, this is, of course, the idea of the fast-moving zombie that was later we picked up on the remake of Dawn of the Dead with our good friend Zack Snyder. Right? Which I actually think is a pretty good remake. It's one of the few Zack Snyder films I really enjoy.
I agree. I didn't mind the remake of that. Saw it a while ago.
That one had Ty Burrell, right? From Modern Family?
Yes.
Yeah, I only like the director's cut of the remake.
Yeah. He's Ty Burrell's like the worst, like he's the biggest jerk on the planet.
Right. In the movie, right?
The character just wants to sleep with everybody.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, any more?
Nope, we're done. That's it.
We have time?
No. Okay. No, you're finished. Get out.
Okay.
And if they make it,
we won.
Yeah.
Good night, all.
Good night. Good night. Good night. My duty, please that boot.